It's been a couple of weeks since we've dealt with Romans 13. So I just want to do a quick review because I didn't get a chance to really dive in to the meat of what we wanted to talk about. I mean, I did a little bit, so we want to review just a little bit of the information that we were discussing. The concept or the verses that we're looking at, verses 11 through the end of the chapter, it says, "Do this, knowing the time, that is already the hour for you to awaken from sleep, for now salvation is nearer to us than when we believed. The night is almost gone, the day is near. Therefore, let us lay aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us behave properly as in the day, not carousing and drunkenness or in sexual promiscuity, sensuality, strife, or jealousy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh in regard to its lust." I mean, my goodness, this is one of the most powerful passages of the New Testament right here. It really is. We're going to spend some time on this because these three verses, I believe it's three, right? 11, 12, no, four verses are just so powerful, and there's so much wisdom in here and practical application that I want to take the time to do them justice, because we can read past this stuff. And if you notice, this is the whole point of what I'm doing with the book of Romans, right? I mean, the book of Romans is only 16 chapters. You can sit down and read it in a short period of time, especially if you don't stop and you're not bogged down. You can read it in a half an hour or an hour, depending on how fast or slowly you read. I'm a slow reader. It might take me an hour. But if you wanted to really break this stuff down into its individual concepts, it's going to take a while, as we've seen. So My process in doing this is to take a step back and have us really contemplate the individual pieces that he's throwing out in this book, and then tying it back into the overall concept, not just of the book of Romans, but of Christianity as a whole. And hopefully, you know, you've been able to get some benefit out of doing that. I know I've gotten a tremendous benefit out of taking this time. I mean, I've preached through Romans before. And after going through it now this second time, I feel like I didn't know it the first time I went through it. It's just so much more stuff is coming to the forefront of my mind, and I just absolutely love it. So where we spent our time about 3 weeks ago was on one word, knowing. Do this knowing the time. And what we discussed was the two different words for know in Greek. One is oida and the other one is gnosko. And we've talked about gnosko quite a bit because that's where the word gnosis or Gnostic comes from, right? And we've talked about Gnostics quite a bit, especially first hour. Oh, no, we were doing that second hour, weren't we? Who knows? I forget. It was a while back. And this concept of knowledge in Greek is really interesting, because when you say you know something in English, you have to ask a few follow-up questions to figure out, do you know it or not? In other words, what's the basis of your knowledge? Is it book knowledge? Is it a knowledge about facts? Or is it real-life experiential knowledge? Now, we can have a tendency to emphasize one over the other, in other words, one being better than the other. And it really actually depends on what we're talking about. Now, if I'm hiring somebody to do some work, do I want them to have oida, which is book knowledge, or do I want them to have gnosko, which is experiential knowledge? I want the experiential knowledge. But do I also want some book knowledge there? Do I? Because think about this. Someone's experience could be so limited that they might have never run into my situation and what I need them to do. And if they don't study and know things that are outside, they might do the same what they've always done, and it might actually not be appropriate for the job that I need done. Right? So a good person who's like a tradesman, or a good person who's a doctor, or somebody that you need to have things done practically, it's really good that they have the experience, but it's also really good that they study and learn things that are new, maybe new tools, maybe new procedures, you know, whatever the process is, in order to come at it with both sides. In other words, we can't just emphasize one over the other. We need to have a balanced approach to these types of things, right? And this OIDA has this concept of knowing something in your mind, knowing something because somebody told you or you read it somewhere. And that's what he's talking about here. He says, do this, knowing the time, that it is already the hour for you to awaken from sleep. What's Paul saying here? He says, I've already told you. There's a very specific time that's at hand. And there's a certain course of action that you need to engage in before it happens. It kind of goes along the lines of what Brandon was talking about. You know, may you live in interesting times. Do you want to know if you're living in interesting times before they happen or after you're already in them? It would probably make sense from a preparation standpoint to know that you're going into something that you need to be prepared for. I mean, how many times has, you know, if you're in this line of work, I know with my line of work, there were times that I would have to give presentations. And I need to know ahead of time that that's expected of me. Matter of fact, I had a really weird dream the other night. Like I was working for Money Guide, the company I used to work for. And I used to go to conferences and I used to have to speak at these conferences. And sometimes I would speak in front of just, you know, 20 people. Sometimes I'd speak in front of hundreds of people, you know, 500, 600, 700 people and give presentations. And I was in this dream, I was at a conference, not expecting to speak. And the guy came and got me and said, you're on in 5 minutes. And he gave me the topic and it was a very complex topic that I had not studied and was not aware. I woke up in a flop sweat. I mean, that was one of my deepest fears, was being called to speak on something as a subject matter expert. And I had no idea that I was about to speak, and I had no idea. I've never studied the topic. How can I be a subject matter expert and have no basis on the subject that I'm talking about? Oh, it's terrifying. And I woke up and I'm like, oh, I'm so glad that that didn't happen. But I've had that happen to me before. Oh, can you talk about this? Can you talk about that? Sure, I guess. It's going to be really general. And that I always used to be afraid of that when it came to biblical stuff too. Oh, you're a preacher. Yeah, I'm 24. I just got out of Bible college. Yeah, will you talk about how would you disprove premillennialism? I have no idea what I'm talking about, but I guess I'll try to figure it out. Now it's like, okay, I like Q&As. Those are fun. They're challenging and they're great. But it's taken me 32 years to like them. Right? Paul's saying, you've been told. You've been told that you're going into interesting times. And you need to be prepared for that. As a matter of fact, he says you need to wake up. And that's the admonition that I want to give to you today and to myself. That if we're not awake, we need to wake up. Now, I think we are awake. But I've also, you know, come to the concept or the understanding that there's different stages of being awake. You know, like my alarm's on my wrist and it's, I don't have an audible alarm. It's just a little vibrating alarm on my phone. And it's because I don't want to wake anybody else up when I have to get up. So I go ahead and it buzzes. And I've got a choice when that thing buzzes. On the top is a little red button that says stop, and then on the bottom is a little blue button that says snooze. So I've gotten in the habit where I'll press snooze once, sometimes twice. And I try to wake up more naturally or slowly. But I have different stages of being awake. You know, I've noticed that with my kids too. You can actually be awake but not be awake. There's times that, you know, with Jaden, especially with his weird schedule that he works, where I'll go in, you know, he's like, yeah, I want to be woken up for dinner. And he gets home, you know, after working at 2 a.m. or something like that, and he takes a quick nap. And I'll go into his room, and he'll sit up real quick and look at me. And you could tell the lights are on, but nobody is home. And I'll say, hey, buddy, food's about ready. And he'll just, and I'll know it's really bad when I just see him smile and just nod his head. And I'm like, Jaden, do you hear me? And he's just smiling, nodding his head. Jaden, do you understand what I'm saying to you? And then he starts to look around and he goes, what? And he has this really concerned look on his face. Jaden, the food's ready. And he's like, what are you talking about? The food's ready, buddy. You know, if you want to eat, if you don't, that's fine. You can go back to sleep, but just know that I woke you up. And then he just, says something inaudible and lays back down. And then here's what happens. He'll wake up about 3-4 hours later. Why didn't you wake me up for food? I'm like, we had a whole conversation, man. I mean, I even think the Wheelers heard it a couple of times. They know this happens on a regular basis. And he comes, why didn't you wake me up? We had a whole conversation. It was like 3 minutes long. So there's different stages of being awake. Sometimes I wonder, is that the level of most Christians' alertness and awakeness? You like that? That was... See, and I know I've been like that too, where, you know, apparently I've had full conversations and not been aware of any of them. You can get someone to agree to a lot of different, especially if you record them, you know. Hey, you agreed to do this. I don't even remember that. My point is that we need to be fully awake. Is there anybody that does not understand what he just says here? Therefore, or do this knowing the time that is already the hour for you to awaken from sleep. Is there anybody that does not know what's going on in the world today? Brandon did a great job with that meditation. We know what time it is. And we could wish that we were born 100 years ago, 200 years ago, whatever the case is, that we were born in more peaceful times. We were born for such a time as this. We were born to be alive now in this place, in this culture, in this political climate, in this religious climate. Because you and I are uniquely qualified for this time. We are. When God looked through time and said, who's going to be around at what times? He chose you and I for now. We've got a job to do. And we need to be fully alert and fully awake to make it happen. We know this. We oida this. This is something that we see looking at the scriptures. But it goes a little bit more than that. I think we also know this experientially. The world's gotten really crazy lately. And quite honestly, I think it's about to say, hold my beer. You know that saying, right? It's like people do something really dumb and then someone's like, hold my beer. I'm going to do something even dumber. This is where we're going. Just when you think does anybody else see this insanity? Does anybody else recognize that this is absolutely nuts? Someone else says, we can make this more crazy. And people are just like, oh yeah, that's great. It's wonderful. We see it. And I think one of the things that we understand are the things that we thought were impossible 10, 15, 20 years ago. We're starting to see those things. They're seeing them as reality. And just when we think, oh, but they'll never do that, they're going to do it. It's just a matter of time. It is time to make sure that we are awake. Knowing the time, as he says here in verse 11, the time that he's specifically referencing is that it's time for you to awaken. That's the time that he's referencing. In other words, spiritually, intellectually, being asleep is a thing of the past. You know, one of my favorite movies is The Matrix. I love the whole red pill, blue pill concept. You know, if you've never seen the movie, you know, it can't be a spoiler because it was like 1999 that this movie was made. So if you haven't seen it in the last 26 years, 25 years, then, you know, I'm really not going to spoil it for you. or I can't really spoil it for you because it's been around. You have this choice. Do you want the truth? Or do you want to stay in the computer simulation? You get to choose the pill. And here's what the character says. He says, I'm only offering you the truth, nothing more. Now, in that movie, everybody, you know, takes the red pill that wakes them up and they're able to get disconnected from the Matrix, the computer simulation. But there's this one guy in the first movie. I don't really know what happened in the other two. I saw them, but they were dumb. Because it's based on Hinduism, and it was just very, put it this way, if you ever want to understand how completely unsatisfying Hinduism is, watch the second and third Matrix, specifically the third Matrix movie. And by the end of the movie, if you're not wanting to throw something at the TV screen, you know, you'll want to, and that's Hinduism. It's completely unsatisfying and completely dumb. Anyway, there's a billion Hindus that might get really angry with me for saying that. But there's this one guy who gets disconnected and he goes and starts to negotiate with the computer system to put himself back in because he'd rather live the lie in comfort than live the truth and have to suffer and fight. And I think that that's where people are at today. Now that when people wake up a lot of times spiritually, now they're like, I want to go back and start living the lie because the living the truth is too hard. We need to be tough. We need to be perseverant. Because these are the times that we live in and they demand it. Let's see how this phrase is used in other places, shall we? Let's go to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. And let's go back to verse 13. He says, but all things become visible when they are exposed by the light. For everything that becomes visible is light. For this reason, it says, awake, sleeper, arise from the dead, Christ will shine on you. Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. So, he says, so notice the train of thought here. We've got light, which makes things visible. Now, what does light also have the ability to do? Physically speaking, wake you up. You know, when I was sick a few years ago, my sleep got all messed up, and I started listening to a guy by the name of Andrew Huberman, who had really good concepts on sleep protocols. And he says one of the first things you need to do when you wake up in the morning is you go outside and look at the sun. I mean, don't stare at the sun, but I mean, get natural sunlight in your eyes, because it helps to reset your circadian rhythm and it wakes you up. And then he says, as the sun goes down, he says, if you have the ability, go watch the sunset. Because the wavelengths of light that come in when the sun's going up versus the sun going down have different effects on the biology of your body. So I've started paying attention. I don't know if it's psychosomatic or not. I don't really care. But I've noticed that when I watch the sunset, when I'm driving while the sun is setting and as it's gone down, I get sleepy. It's just a natural thing. And so then they say, you know, make sure you turn off any blue light. Only have, you know, warm red and yellow light. No blue light, because the blue light's what stimulates and kills your melatonin. That's why it's good to not use screens late at night, or have your screens turned to a soft light, or get the blue blocker glasses if you're going to look at screens, because it destroys all your melatonin. It can really impact your sleep cycles. In other words, light controls physically, biologically, whether or not you're awake or asleep. Why'd God do it that way? Well, one of the reasons, passage right here. What does spiritual light do? Everything becomes visible. He says, for this reason, it says, awake, sleeper, arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Spiritual light wakes you up spiritually, just like physical light wakes you up physically. That's the point. So since Christ has shown in our hearts and in our minds, and has shown us the truth through His Word, we are to be awake. We are to pay attention to these things. And then he says in verse 15, therefore, as a result of having the spiritual light shine on you and being awake, be careful how you walk. Be careful how you walk. And then he brings up two examples, not as unwise, but as wise. Everything you do and every way you walk in the Lord will help you notice, am I walking wisely or unwisely? As we've talked about, actions have consequences. There are consequences to being righteous. There are consequences to being unrighteous. Wisdom knows what those consequences are, and wisdom, it analyzes those things and accepts the consequences of those actions. So that when the consequences of being righteous come to bear on you, whether they be positive or negative, because there are negative consequences to being righteous, you've already counted the cost and weighed them against eternity and determined, yes, this is worth it. I would rather suffer temporarily and have eternity with Him. And I am willing to do whatever it takes to help other people come on that journey as well. That's what this is about. Wise versus unwise. Making the most of your time. Pay attention. Every day you wake up, recognize this, the days are evil. It's up to you to redeem the time and make the most of the opportunity. Left alone, hear me please on this. Left alone, the days are evil. If you just let the days go naturally, without having a plan, without being proactive, the days are evil. It doesn't mean that you're going out robbing banks and killing people. But doing nothing for the sake of righteousness, because we don't have a plan, it's evil. There's nothing neutral. We're either glorifying the Lord or we're not. Remember what Jesus says. He who is not for me is against me. He who does not gather with me scatters. We're either gathering, and if we're not gathering, we might as well, Jesus says, be scattering. That's the process. That's the procedure. Have a plan for the rest of the day. You know what? Sometimes that plan is relaxing. You need that sometimes. 14-hour day delivering packages, 200 stops. Do you need to relax, Barry? You're gonna wear yourself out if you go at that pace every single day, aren't you? Yeah. So guess what? Sometimes what you need for the Lord is some time to unplug your brain, to recharge your batteries. Jesus needed it. We need it. It's okay to relax. But can there be a line between relaxing and being lazy? Can you say you need more relaxing than we actually do and compromise our productivity for the Lord? Yep. Absolutely. Have a plan. But then, be flexible in your plan, because sometimes, you know, I try to sometimes really schedule things out to be super productive, and then something comes up that's more important than what I had planned, and it can throw my whole plan off, and if I can't adapt to it, my day's shot. The days are evil. Our planning needs to be flexible, but rigid enough to make sure we stay on track. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 4. Oh, and after that passage in Ephesians 5, he says, don't get drunk. Because that's how people have a lot of time to, you know, they have a tendency to do that. And because think about it. If people aren't productive, they still want to have fun. So they do it by filling their lives with things that are not profitable. One of those things happens to be substances that make you feel euphoric. And it's interesting because the passage we're going to in 1 Peter chapter 4 talks about the same thing. It's almost like God's trying to get a point across. Chapter 4, verse 1. Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose. Because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. For the time, pay attention, for the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desires of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, abominable idolatries. In all this, they are surprised that you do not run with them in the same excess of dissipation, and they malign you. But they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. See, the point is, for the time already past. In other words, he's saying, wake up. The time already past is sufficient for you to have done all of these things of living like the world. For those of us who have lived in the world for any great length of time, we know that it has nothing to offer of substance. It'll promise you the world, but it gives you nothing. You know, back when I used to watch TV, you know, high school, I did all my partying in high school. Used to throw keggers and make money and all that kind of good stuff. Keggers, yep. Used to throw keggers and make money. $2 a head, all you can drink. 4 kegs in the swamps in Florida. Police, you always would think that the police didn't come. Then you'd have people that would do dumb things and the police would come and they'd bring the paddy wagons and start throwing people in there. So we had to get good at hiding stuff. I was a punk. I really was. So I remember the beer commercials. Everybody who drank beer was having a great time. They had friends. They had girls. They had music. They had celebration. They just were, and I haven't seen a beer commercial in a long time, but I imagine they're the same. You know what they never showed? They never show you hugging the toilet. They'd never show the hangover. They never show the days of nausea afterwards. I believe the lie. And then you face the consequences and you recognize this world just lies to you. Time's already passed to believe that junk. What we have is so much better. You take the principles that God gives you, you're going to build a great marriage. You take the principles that God gives you, you're going to build great families. You're going to build great relationships. You're going to build a great church. You're going to build great everything. You're going to have peace. You're going to have joy. You're going to have happiness. That's not why we do it. Those are just the ramifications of doing the things that God says. What happens when we put other people before ourselves? If you're in a marriage and the husband's putting the wife before himself and the wife is putting the husband before herself, I'm going to get what I need. She's going to get what she needs. And we're going to have joy, more joy, because Jesus said, and he knows it because he's God, it's more blessed to give than to receive. It's just better. Yeah, you got to suffer. But anything worthwhile in this life is something you got to suffer for. You've seen it. I've seen it. You ever known people who are very successful in life who are self-made versus people that inherit it? They are very different people. The people that have had to work for it, that have had to suffer for it, versus the people that have just had it handed to them. That's why our country is the way it is. Our country does not value freedom because most people have never had to suffer for it. They believe they're entitled to it. Now, we do have the rights from God. Don't get me wrong. But in this world, no one just gives you stuff. Anything worthwhile, you have to suffer for it. Let's head over to Luke chapter 12. Almost done. Luke chapter 12. And let's go to verse 54. It says, and he was also saying to the crowd, when you see cloud rising in the west, immediately you say a shower is coming, and so it turns out. And when you see a south wind blowing, you say it'll be a hot day, and it turns out that way. You hypocrites, you know how to analyze the appearance of the earth and the sky, but why do you not analyze this present time? It's time to wake up. It's time to wake, and I know we're awake. I'm just saying, how awake are we? Are we awake enough to know the present time, but then not act as if that time we're in that time and we're going more into it? I'm a nostalgic individual. I think the 80s was the greatest decade to grow up. Someone who grew up in the 90s says, man, the 90s were the greatest decade to grow up. Someone who grew up in the 70s, same thing. 60s, same thing. 50s, you know, my parents grew up in the 40s. I don't know too many people that say the 40s was the greatest time to grow up with all the stuff going on. But we call them the greatest generation, don't we? There's a reason for that. My point is, I can be nostalgic. And if I left myself alone, I would have the tendency to want to live life the way that it used to be. Because those were my principles, and no one's taking them from me. Now, that could be a good defiance, but it could also be exceedingly naive, because guess what? We don't live in the 80s anymore. And that's a good thing. Because as much as I'm nostalgic about the 80s, I know the 80s had a lot of problems too. Every generation has its problems. But we're alive now, and it's 2024. Life is not like it was in the 80s or the 90s. Life's not like it was at the turn of the millennium even. It's very different now. And as Christians, we can't live life like it used to be. We have to live according to the present times and analyze them accurately and prepare based upon what God has told us and what we see taking place. We need to raise our kids that way. We need to construct our families that way. We need to interact with each other that way. Encouraging each other, making sure, especially what we've seen lately, that none of us get hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. The reason we're to wake up, let's head back to Romans 13 and we'll finish up. Notice what Paul says. It's already the hour for you to awaken from sleep, for now salvation is nearer to us than when we believed. Simple point. Like I said, Jesus is closer to coming back now than he was yesterday. He's definitely closer to coming back now than he was in Paul's day. And even if Jesus tarries some more, you're closer to dying. So am I. Every one of us is one day closer to dying today than we were yesterday. And for the Christian, that is good news. That's your salvation. That's when you're one step closer to being fully realized. So you know how this operates, right? When you become a Christian, you now move from the domain of darkness into the kingdom of his beloved son. You're still living here in this flesh. But now you're reconciled with God and you are entitled to all the blessings and challenges of being a child of God. When you die, your body is rotten in the ground or cremated or whatever the case is, but your soul and spirit go back to be with the Lord. And you're with Christ. Your salvation's not complete yet. Fully realized. Because what has to happen next is the resurrection of the dead, the second coming of Christ, the new body that's given to us, the reunion of the body, soul, and spirit being preserved complete without blame at the coming of Christ. And we are then transformed into his glory and we partake with him in his glory, in that fellowship, in that communion. The marriage supper of the Lamb takes place and we help him destroy this place. All of that takes place. All of that is now closer one more day. You don't know, I don't know when my last breath's going to be. If my family history has anything to say about it, I've got a lot less time looking forward than I have in the rearview mirror. So we need to wake up. We need to live our lives with the understanding that salvation is closer now than when we first believed. And that if today is our last day, we're good with that. So let's stay awake. Let's be alert. Let's be active. Let's plan our time to make the most of our opportunities. And let's help each other do the exact same thing. Let's pray.